Good evening. We have two difficult parshas in terms of Tazria Metzora, but we want to start with the first one. We can't get too much into the involved in the actual Tzoras, but we'll talk with peripheral issues in a little bit. The first time I wanted to say something about the Haftorah as well, which is very pertinent. So the parsha begins, Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Lamor, and then it says, Yishor Ki Tazria. What does this have to do with Metzora if the parsha is all about Tzoras? Yishor Ki Tazria. And of course, what we're starting to do here is we're dealing with in Vayikra life cycle. And we started over here with the beginning of life for a human being, which is the cause and effect of Metzora, is various, there are various reasons for the cause of the English word being leprosy, even though it's a spiritual disease, not a physical disease. Only a Kohen can diagnose it. A doctor would have no say in the matter. And that's why today it's just an impossible situation. There is no tzaras because also one would have to bring a carbon, and we can't bring a carbon to solve the problem. And therefore, we don't have any kohanim that would be qualified to deal with it. And we're told that it has to do with lashon hara, but there's various other incidences that have to do with it. And the first thing that we talk about is the story of Eve. The story of Eve is a very interesting one because he was a very righteous person, and every weekend he had a big party for all his family. He had many children, many, many children, and he made a big party for everybody and was very generous. But as his friends told him, when God started to give him all his sorrows, all his plagues, that maybe because he should have invited other people, been more generous to poor people. And, of course, we're told this story of that he was one of the OSAs, one of the advisors of Paro, who was abstained in the voting. Israel voted not to kill the Jews, and the Paro Bilam said yes, and he was on the fence, and he just didn't cast the vote. And of course, we know what did happen. And because of his silence, and that's always what we always condemn, somebody who was silent in the face of things that he should be saying. And that's another cause for tzaras. It's God saying not only when you speak and you don't say what you're supposed to say, it's also when you should say something and you don't, is also very important as well. And, of course, with being very stingy in certain things, there are very various reasons. But we start over here, Yishor Ki Tazria, is that before we dealt with in last week's parsha all the other animals, and we're mirroring the parsha of Bereshis when we see that man was the last creature created on this earth. All the animals came before man. Even the birds came before man. All the living creatures on the earth came before man. He was the last thing, and so therefore we begin the parsha of Tazria with man. But also, Yishor Ki Tazria V'yoldo Zachor. What is the purpose over here at this point in time is really a very important purpose over here, is that when you give birth, obviously we know, we learn as children that when a woman gives birth, she makes all these promises, or she's in a lot of pain, and she maybe does some swearing and making vows that she doesn't want to have any more children and things of that nature. And so the end result is that she has to bring a carbon to expiate her sin, because obviously when it's all over and God has saved her, one of the reasons for bringing a carbon, of course, is to thank God for her survival. Today it seems less important in some ways, but obviously we know not that long ago, but childbirth would be a very, very dangerous thing. It was very common to either have a stillborn or a miscarriage, or the woman would die in childbirth, and it would be a very horrendous situation, and you'd have to be thankful for survival alone. But so that as well, and so there's a dual purpose in bringing a carbon. But nevertheless, we are told, and it says that you have a bris on the eighth day. We are told this by Abraham as well. Why does it have to repeat it? And the double lashon over here, whenever we learn, it has to be for another reason. And it is also told to us that this solidifies the fact that even when a bris comes out on the eighth day, comes out on a Shabbos, that we have the bris on the Shabbos. But more than that, too, the first 7 days, the woman is in tzar, leida. She has a lot of pain and anguish, and they have to be separate. They have to live separately, the husband and wife, but on eighth day when they can finally get together. So then God said on the eighth day we will have the bris because it is it's supposed to be a joyous occasion. And right up to now, there have been a lot of tzar between the husband and wife. And now when they can breathe a little bit easier that they've gotten this far, so now we have the bris, which is another milestone. Interestingly enough, there's one very interesting thing about childbirth. Is we think about so many tefillos that we have, so many prayers that we make throughout our lives in different times of the year, and yet we think to ourselves, how come there is no prayer to have a child, to get a good shidduch for a child? And the reason is, very simply, because you can't wait until the kid is 20 or 25 years old. That would be, it's a little bit too late. You have to start early, and when do we start? We start at the bris when we say l'torah l'chuppa l'masim tovim, and when we make that pronouncement at the bris, we're asking God at that point right away when the child is 8 days old, please make sure that this child hopefully will marry well and do good things and have a good life. And you have to be proactive. Even when the child is that young, it's never too early to start, very interestingly enough. But so it says, "Uben Yom Hashmini Imo B'sar Lo So." The next pasuk says, "Ushloshim Yom Ushloshis Yomim." 33 days Teishev Ben Beit Tahara. The woman is now in a state of purity for 33 days, even though she may show some signs of blood. And what we're told by Chazal, there's actually a disagreement here because we don't know, or maybe things have changed throughout the ages. But even in that time, there was a disagreement between the Chachamim, the prevailing thought, and Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel claimed that the 33 and 7, which was added by a Zohar, turns out to be 40, obviously. And for a girl, it's 14 and 66, which turns out to be 80. Now, we know that what is the reason for the 40, obviously, is just the same as Midah Keneged Midah. It takes 40 days for the fetus to form in the womb, and therefore the 40 days that it takes, it's just a commensurate time. Later on, we make the number 40 as well at this point in time at the end of the process. But more than that, it's a very interesting fact, and I don't know that this is scientifically correct. Perhaps it was in the time of the Gemara. But it says that when a woman gives birth to a child, she has all the fluids built up in her body from 9 months of not menstruating, that she hasn't had a period in all this time, and therefore it builds up. So all of this time, it takes 40 days for all the fluids to finally ooze out of the body, and for those 40 days, whatever she sees is not damnida, and therefore it's a time period of 40 days, but then why would it be 80 for an akeva? And Rabbi Shmuel claims that that the blood of a zohar is warmer and in the womb of a woman, and therefore it flows out more quickly. And the blood of a female is colder, and therefore since it has a little bit of a different temperature level, it would take 80 days for the fluid to exit the womb for that period. It's just a very interesting thought process that the Gemara discusses, but we don't know how scientifically accurate it is. And of course, even the Chazal at that time said, no, it's the same for both. And the Torah is just giving for in the Keva a longer period of time for no other reason than it just says so in the Torah. And that's what it is. The one thing that brings us right away to this, the point of Tzaras is, that what is the story of when we bring somebody is told to bring a carbon, what happens if, and I mentioned this before, but not in this detail, when somebody is commanded to bring a carbon and he can't afford it, he's told he has to bring an animal and he's not able to do it, he can't afford it.
So what we do is we have a sliding scale, and it's called the carbon oleviorate. You're evaluated what your abilities are, and it could be two turtle doves even, and shtei tziporim chayos tahoros. Interestingly enough, it's called tzipor as opposed to b'nei yonah, doves. Tzipor is just the usual term for birds in general as a species and not a particular bird. But it's very interesting over here that one we slaughter and one we set free. We do not bring it on the Mizbeach. We don't bring as a carbon either one of those two birds, and we let one fly away for the Lashon Hara as well, because we don't know what the story is, what pronouncement the woman has made, or anybody. But the point is, if somebody brings, if he's evaluated that he has to bring a more expensive animal, and then he goes ahead on a regular tzaras and he brings a less expensive animal, has he fulfilled his obligation? Under normal circumstances, there's a machlokas in the Gemara, there's a difference of opinion if one has fulfilled his obligation. But the Eved, in other words, if he already did it and he brought the wrong animal, has he fulfilled his obligation? And there's a difference of opinion, except when somebody has been accused of being a tzoros oyin. In other words, he's being stingy and he hasn't done what he was supposed to do in terms of that. So if obviously over there is no machlokis, when somebody does that, when he speaks Lashon Hara and he says things or does things that he shouldn't do of this nature, and that is the cause for his tzoros, then if he brings the wrong carbon, something less expensive, then everyone agrees that he will not fulfill his obligation, because that is his problem. His problem is he is not forthcoming with what he should do. One of the greatest major questions that we have is in Parshas Metzora, which is very interesting in terms of, it says, what happens, there is three different types of tzaras. One could have tzaras on himself, on his personal, on his body, and one could have tzaras on his clothing, which is very difficult to understand if you have a rash on your clothing, but also it could be on your house. The interesting thing about it happening on the house is that if you see this discoloration in the house, and so we are told right away that make sure before you call the kohen, you empty out the house. This becomes a very public spectacle, and because even when the Kohen does say that you are guilty of something, the tzaras, it has been deemed to be a full-fledged tzaras, and michutz l'machaneh moshavo badod yeshev, you have to be alone, even with other mitzoraim, other people with the disease of tzaras, you can't even associate with them. You have to literally be alone. You're in solitary. Outside the machneh, you have no contact with anybody because you don't deserve to have contact with anybody. You've done something that shows you don't deserve to be part of a community. You've either spoken Lashon Hara or did something that you didn't speak up when you should have, and something of that nature, and therefore God is punishing you in a very public manner. But the interesting thing is that it says, you see the Rashi in Metzora, when it says if somebody has tzaras in the house, so they have to go out in front of his house, take out all his furniture, empty out the house, because if the Kohen decides that it is tzaras, they're going to destroy everything that's in the house. Everything becomes tummy and subject to nullification, subject to destruction, and therefore better take everything out. And if we have to destroy the house, we destroy the house. But yet it says if that comes of an asatz, it's a bias. If the Kohen goes ahead and says, yes, it is tzaras, and now I'm telling you to dismantle your home brick by brick and crush it into dust, don't worry, because in the walls of the house you will find jewels that the people, the B'nai Kanan, the people that you took their homes when you conquered the land, you will find hidden jewels in the thing, and it will give you the ability to buy a house. And the question is asked, obviously, why should somebody be rewarded for a sin of that nature that he's sent to be outside and forced to dismantle his own home? And the interesting thing about it is it's very realistic for one very important reason. If somebody, could you imagine the point when at that moment when the person is told you have to destroy your house? what is more valuable to you other than, of course, your family? But nevertheless, if you're told to destroy your house totally into dust, you think basically, what am I going to do? What can I possibly do? And yet you're willing to do it. You've shown a great level of faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're willing to go that extra yard and destroy Venosat Sabayas, to destroy every brick and take it apart. Well, that shows a tremendous emunah. And when you show that emunah, God is willing to reward you for just being a good soldier, so to speak. And that's what we're talking about over here. But of course, we see the order is, when it first goes on the house, even though the order in the parashas is very different, but first, as we see, it gets closer. When it's in the house, you don't have the stain on your body, on your being, that's more uncomfortable. And then it gets closer if you continue to make your missteps, so to speak, and it gets on your clothing. And from your clothing, if you still haven't learned your lesson and you do it a third time, then it's on your body and you can't even, you can't avoid that. And it's the most uncomfortable thing is when you have these rashes that show on your body. And of course, it's a very embarrassing situation, we should realize. The interesting thing, once again, and it says he uses the language ki sihiyeh, if it will be. Why doesn't it say in general ki, if it is? Because what we're told is that it'll be only when they get into the land of Israel. They are now embarking on the beginning of, they're in year number 2 of year 40. Of course, they didn't realize it would be 40 years in the Midbar at this time. But nevertheless, up to this point, for the 40 years the Jews in the Midbar, the women did not experience any, the men or the women did not have any nocturnal emissions or any dam nida. They didn't experience any of that. So the Lashon in the Chumash is ki sihiyeh. It will be in the future when you get into the land. God did so many things we don't even realize all the miracles that God brought, that wrought for the Jews in Egypt, not just food and clothing and everything else, but so many different things that that they didn't have to go through as normal beings to make it more comfortable living in the desert. Of course, we would know living in the desert could cause many problems, but nevertheless, it's, but also one other thing, it's just very interesting. The word nega is the same letters as the word oneg. And so if you want to just enjoy life, be like an Epicurean, to just enjoy, eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow you may die, to have that attitude, then you will have the nega. The word oneg will be, the letters will be changed around to the word nega. And vice versa, if you're willing to get away from that attitude and do what's good, be a member of the community, and that will be. Of course, what struck me in the community, what struck me today was the Haftorah in particular. Vianosh tells a tremendous story of the Arbon Oshim Hayu Mitzoroim, and it tells the exploits of Elisha, basically, who made these predictions, and he is, in the Gemara tells us, he performed more miracles than any other Navi. Even Eliyahu didn't perform many, only one supernatural event, and Elisha did at least two very, very public things that he made predictions that came true and that raised his level. Of course, he had that, Elisha was, he was a protege of Eliyahu HaNavi, but nevertheless, he was a devout disciple of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, certainly. And when he made a prediction, the Jewish people were going through a famine from the people of Aram. They were being surrounded, and they were literally giving up hope. And there were these four people who were surrounded, and they gave up hope of living. And what we're told over here, never to give up, because God created these noises in the middle of the night that caused the entire army. They thought they were being surrounded by the Jewish army. Perhaps they had been in league with, made a pact, like NATO made a pact with Mitzrayim and the other surrounding nations, and they were being attacked from all sides. And they left everything behind, all their supplies, and there was plenty of food for everybody after that. But these four people who were sitting around And when they heard these, they heard the noises, but in general, they ran to sea. They figured they're dying anyhow. They're mechutz lamachna. They have nothing to eat. And it always brought back to mind, I had a member of my synagogue many years ago when he had been running away from the town of Biberich, and they destroyed his whole town. And he and one other boy escaped from his village, and he was 11, and this other boy was 18, and they were running and running until they got to the forest. And when he first, he always said that he stopped and he felt his body, saw no bullet holes were in him, and he kept running. And for 3 days, they wandered in the forest without any food. And they basically, at one point in time, they gave up total, they gave up hope. They figured they're going to starve to death because they had no food and they hadn't eaten in days. And there was no, they didn't know what to do. And finally, they heard voices, but they were looked at each other and they just looked at each other and they said, are these Russians, the voices that we hear, are they speaking Russian or are they Nazis, are they Germans? And they didn't know, but they said, either way, if it's Nazis, they're dead, but they have no food, so they're going to die anyhow. And if it's Russians, then maybe they'll be in luck. And it turned out, of course, that they were Russians, and they gave them plenty of food to the last minute. And he always told me the story so many times because he had given up hope until the last minute. They just didn't know. But it's never too late. We're always told by the Gemara, "Afilu cherev chad munach al tzavaro," even if a sharp sword is lying over your throat. You just don't know. It happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. It happens to so many of us. And there are so many stories in the Holocaust that we could, and this in the time of Yom HaZikaron, we remember the horrors, but we remember there are obviously so many of us who are alive today. It's because we survived through miraculous means that somehow God came to the rescue at the very last minute, the very last second, that somehow there are so many stories that one could list. We'll call it a night over here, and I hope everybody is spared from all the things that happened in this parsha. Thank you very much. Good evening.